job losses, but also to health and safety issues, and also linked with organized crime, which is pretty much established by all law enforcement agencies. I'm referring, of course, to counterfeiting here. Our 2008 customs seizures indicate a whopping 178 million articles counterfeit seized. And if you look into details, you see a number of very dangerous counterfeits which are increasing. Cosmetics, 5 million, toys, 5 million, electrical appliances, etc., etc. The OECD, which to my knowledge is the only widely recognized international study on the matter, has valued the counterfeit business to $250 billion per year. And that is only physical counterfeit, which is internationally traded. So that excludes domestic consumption, that excludes non-tangible goods. There's been just last week a study, we don't know the details of this study, but the study of MassCap mentions that for piracy, a large amount of EU jobs, 1.2 million, lost in 2015. I'll put a question mark. This is not a European Commission study. It's not an official organization study, but still, it is a number. So now I hear, and we've been told that this should be then addressed in the appropriate organizations which are dealing with intellectual property, whether it is a World Intellectual Property Organization in Geneva, or WTO, or the World Customs Organization. Problem is, let's put it clearly, it is extremely difficult, and all these organizations do a very important work in fighting counterfeiting piracy, which we support, but it is extremely difficult because of the consensus, because certain countries do not want the word enforcement to be mentioned in these negotiations. This is the reality, so it is not with no surprise that a number of countries who were willing to go ahead have decided to join together. WHO MACTA, I think, is pretty well known, but just for clarity, 11 parties in 5 continents. So it's a pretty wide coverage, including with developing countries. Of course, the idea is not to have a closed club or to leave the membership as it is. The idea is very much that the agreement should be open to other governments or other countries to join later on, and we are making sure that this will happen. ACTA, what is it? What is the content of ACTA? Well, first of all, the guiding principles as far as the European Union is concerned. First guiding principle is that there will be no change in European legislation. There will be no either harmonization or change of substantive law for intellectual property. So this means that, for instance, and I've picked up the most spread, or the most widely spread rumors, because there are rumors, which I've read that there's going to be a three-strike rule or a graduated response mechanism. This is simply not true. No ACTA party has ever proposed it, and even if one party were to propose it, we would refuse it for the reason above, that it would go beyond what is harmonized in Europe. Similarly, I've also heard rumors that say that we're going to change the ISP liability or their role, or that we will impose filtering on internet, etc. This is absolutely non-true. Equally, there will be no attempt to the legislation on privacy data protection which we have in Europe. I've seen that the European Protection EPDS has made an opinion on this. We have no problem respecting all that. We have absolutely no intention to do this. And finally, and the last most spread rumor concerns what could happen to individual travelers. And here, clearly, we are not introducing new provisions on alleged custom searches for, I don't know, individual laptops, MP3, etc. I think that customs officers have other things to do. Second guiding principle is that ACTA is an enforcement treaty. It's not a substantive treaty. So it will not change the checks and balance, if you want, of rights or the obligations or the exceptions, etc. It's exclusively about enforcement of existing laws. So we're not changing, I don't know, duration of copyright or this or that. This is exclusively about enforcement. And last but not least, criminal sanctions, which, by the way, are non-negotiated by the Commission by the rotating presidency, because it's a non-harmonized matter, will only deal with infringement on commercial scale. So there will be no criminalization of the proverbial innocent housewife, as I've sometimes read as well. Now, the rest of what I'll say will be the consequence of these three guiding principles. There will be six chapters in ACTA. The most important one on which I will dwell a bit will be regarding the legal framework for enforcement of IPRs. There's also international cooperation where we are working with similar countries to make sure that the agencies work well together so that we also avoid duplicating technical assistance activities, etc., and that we can also develop capacity building, which is very important. If we go in details now on the chapter of the legal framework, which is itself composed of four sections, and for the European Commission, clearly, as I've said, the position of negotiation is based on the acquis, so on the directives that you are seeing here. Clearly, we will not move from this law, from this legislation. And this is, of course, concerning what the EU position is. And, of course, I have no intention to speak of the other parties' position. It is for themselves to organize similar transparency events. Is ACTA secret? Well, first of all, ACTA, I think, is one of the few international negotiations which was announced before its launching in this very room in the first stakeholders' consultation meeting which we had in 2008. This being said, I should add that, as far as I know, I do not know any international negotiations which are public. If you go in WTO or WIPO, you don't have cameras inside the Director's General room when he's negotiating with ambassadors or ministers. This being said, the parties in ACTA have agreed on confidentiality rules, which, of course, intend to respect. But we have informed duly the European Parliament as of 2008 in the INTA committee and yourselves in 2008 and 2009. We can, of course, only inform of what is existing at this stage. We cannot inform in advance of what has not been discussed, or what has not been agreed, or what has not been touched yet as a chapter, which is the case for one or two chapters. This being said, we understand that there are a lot of concerns and that sometimes ignorance feeds rumors, and sometimes rumors are also fed by groups with a different purpose. And so clearly, because we have nothing to hide, we EU, as I've just explained, on what was guiding our position of negotiation, which is our legislation, which by definition, of course, is public and you all know well, we will definitely request from our partners the possibility to release the negotiating text and try to obtain a consensus on this matter at the next round in New Zealand in April. And so that everybody can see that we do what we say, and actually we say what we do as well. State of play and next steps. We started in June 2008. There were seven rounds so far. The next round will be held in a few weeks in New Zealand with a goal of concluding in 2010. There will also be a civil society meeting organized by the host, the New Zealand government, during the next round in Wellington. All the chapters will be on the agenda this time, and clearly, as I've mentioned, a cross-cutting issue like transparency will also be on the agenda. We've solidly insisted on this. So, thank you very much. This is now your turn. I would like to also draw your attention that there's a lot of material which we have published on our website as well. There is a summary of each round of negotiations. We also hope to obtain very soon the agreement of all our partners to publish an updated fact sheet so that it is clear that many of the principles which I've highlighted will be also confirmed by the negotiating partners. As I've said, we have nothing to hide. So this is your time now. Thank you very much. Yes.
Hello, I'm Jeremy Zimmerman from citizen advocacy group La Quadrature du Net. Actually, I've got a few questions for you. The first one, in the form of a troll, as we say on the internet, is you say it won't change the EU law, and in the US they say it won't change the US law. But obviously, both laws being different, one of them has to be lying. But that's not the serious part of the question. My question would be about the criminal sanctions that are being negotiated by the presidency on behalf of the member states. Maybe you could detail the process, the interministerial ad hoc group or whatever that is deciding, and how you can guarantee that it won't go beyond the EU acquis, as it's not in your negotiation mandate. And also maybe in the form of a quick comment, I see you use that BASCAP study as a base for your demonstration on how piracy harms and kills and create job loss and so on. You will soon, as everybody else, have insight on how this study, as every other commission by the entertainment industry, is so much biased because it is based on the lost sale myth. And we all know that this lost sale myth is all that is used by the entertainment industry to try to prove the prejudice caused by piracy. You know that a kid who downloaded 1,000 movies would have indeed bought 1,000 DVDs. Isn't that true? So it's amusing to see this study as a basic for your speech, knowing that what is not in my knowledge in the EU acquis so far is the calculation of the damages, statutory damages, where you will agree with the equations that are handed out by the industries, and you will agree on their demonstration on the prejudice based on the lost sale myth, where many jurisdictions in the world agreed to the opposite. So this, I think, even if it's not in the acquis, is something that you will push through ACTA, and which is extremely dangerous.
Well, it's many questions, in one, if I can say so. First of all, you are right in saying that, of course, if we abide by our legislation and if another country's legislation is different, one of the two will have to change. That is clear. Which one, I do not know because I don't want to speak for the others. What I'm saying, what I've been saying repeatedly, I think clearly, that we will stick to the acquis. So that's all I can say, including for what concerns statutory damages. We will not change that. As to your question on criminal sanctions, here I would say that the question should be addressed to the rotating presidency, because as you rightly said, it is not for the Commission to negotiate these provisions, but as coordinator of the negotiation, I can tell you and confirm you that, as you can imagine, it will be strictly in line with the acquis, and I do not think, I don't want to speak for them, but I don't think the member states would appreciate that through an international negotiations, the acquis, which often has been fought hardly or the result of compromises, etc., would be changed. So I can confirm that here too. As to BASCAP, I've mentioned, if you listen to my presentation, that this was not a commission study. This is just an example which was released, I think, last week. As I've said, we didn't check the number. But it is a study. I mean, it doesn't mean that it's true. We all know that to each study there is a counter study, and I'm sure you would be, of course, totally objective, and they are totally subjective, but they probably think the same of you. So the truth may lie somewhere. I've never said, by the way, that piracy killed. I never said that. I said counterfeit kills, and it does. But I never said piracy killed. Yes, sir.
Thank you. I'm David Hammerstein from the Transatlantic Consumer Dialogue, also a former Member of Parliament. Piracy, I'm not sure if it kills, but strong enforcement measures can kill. The access to medicine in the poor countries, essential life-saving medicines, is a key issue. One of the key elements of ACTA is very strong enforcement measures, border measures, seizures. We have seen over the last year dozens of cases where legal, affordable generic medicines have been seized on their way to third countries with these essential medicines. This is a great concern. Another question is, you said that we are not going to change the community acquis. Nevertheless, it is a secret of voices that everyone knows practically in this room that the European Commission is preparing a new version of IPRID for criminal sanctions. I'm not sure if it's the reform of IPRID or IPRID 2 in a second reading. And this has been given urgency to the European Commission. Maybe you could see how is that going? Why are so many services of the Commission informing civil society that this is being worked upon? Why is this being denied? What is happening there? Then on another issue of democracy, it seems as if the European Commission and the Council is very uncomfortable with international multilateral institutions like the WTO, the World Intellectual Property Organization, the World Health Organization, where countries like India, Brazil, many of the southern countries are asking for reform of the way IPR is worked to guarantee essential goods for development, for well-being of the southern countries. It is seems that the new plurilateral system, the way ACTA is being negotiated, is setting a precedent, a political precedent, not only for IPR, but for other issues of how to move forward with a type of Sherpa system, a system where this is a voluntary system, and then you will have no choice but to cooperate. And the last question would be about internet server provider liability. And it goes along with the idea of cooperation. I've heard, even from yourself, that there's no need that ISP liability already exists in the community acquis, that in order to gain safe harbor, the internet service providers will have no choice but to apply self-regulation measures that could include, so obviously no cutting off of internet connection will be taken by the ACTA negotiations, nor mandated, but this could be part of a self-regulation and suggested as, and also it could be pushed by the idea of criminal sanctions. And the last question is, don't you think that criminal sanctions will have a chilling effect on innovation? It will make so many companies all over the world that deal in this gray area of intellectual property where today there is already in place civil sanctions. If they have to risk criminal sanctions, won't this create fear and make many countries not want to innovate? Thank you.
Thank you. So that's five questions in one, if I counted properly, in rather different fields. Access to medicine, very important topic. And as you know very well, the EU has been clearly one of the most active proponents of the change of TRIPS agreement that allow compulsory licenses for exporting generic medicine to countries in need who don't have manufacturing facility. I don't think this can be denied. So there is no reason why we should suddenly be against it, clearly. You've mentioned there have been dozens of cases, et cetera, et cetera. No, that's not true. There's been eight cases in one country in 2008, and that's it. There's not been any more cases in 2009, I'm sorry. No, there are constantly, of course, checks by customs, yes. But what I mean by a case, I mean by a case of medicines being held, being detained temporarily for patent litigation purposes. And this was only in one country, because in that country, for some reasons, they had been creating a jurisprudence which we don't share, and we are taking care of that with our colleagues of customs to make sure it doesn't happen. The reason also that it didn't happen in 2009, it didn't happen since 2008, because we took care of it also with the right holders who have committed not to use, even if they could, legislation for that. But we are fixing the law, and of course the purpose is not to hamper access to legitimate generics, if you want, in transit. This being said, it should also be reminded that counterfeit of medicine is a problem, and that customs do have to control medicine, and you can't just create a kind of a valise diplomatique category for medicine where you could just put anything in the box and say, generic medicine in transit, please do not open. So this is not a situation where we want to go, because we're also a duty vis-à-vis our citizens, but also vis-à-vis, in case of transit, of other citizens where the customs might not be as efficient as our European customs, and I think it's fair to say European customs probably also saved many lives, in particularly in developing countries where the issue of counterfeit medicine is much more acute than in Europe or developed countries where the health system is pretty tight. Your second question was regarding the new or directive, what you call IPRED, IPR Enforcement Directive 2. This is totally, I mean, it's a different agenda. I mean, clearly the member states would not allow that the debate on this directive, if there is one, because this is for Commissioner Tajani to discuss. I'm sorry, I'm not updated yet, to discuss whether they will make a proposal, but clearly there will be a proposal and presumably a debate, I say presumably because there's been one in the past, in the Council and the European Parliament, and to imagine that the Commission could just sneak this discreetly with the Parliament, which we have to ratify anyway, all international agreements, including ACTA, is simply not realistic. I mean, there's just no rationale to that. Even if the Commission were the most cynical, it just wouldn't fly. So perhaps there is intention to harmonize in Europe the issue of criminal sanction, because it is a problem. You do have to realize that we don't negotiate anything with third countries on this aspect, because we have no acquis. This is a ridiculous situation. We are the ones suffering from our intellectual property right being stolen by counterfeit, which are most of the cases are non-European. So it is very much in our interest to have some legislation there. But it is not for here, for now, to do the debate. This is a debate which will have to take place with the Council, with the European Parliament, etc., and all voices can be heard. You've mentioned the issue of having the negotiations outside the WTO. I fully agree with you. It would have been ideal to have this kind of situation, negotiation in WTO, because WTO has advantages which you cannot find anywhere. It has a binding dispute settlement. It's the only binding dispute settlement in international intellectual property, so it's very important. The problem is, and this is the reality, I, as a speaker for the EU and WTO on this matter, I know it for a fact, that we can't even speak of existing enforcement practices. It's been denied from the agenda several times by some countries who do not even want that we simply say, okay, this is how we apply the WTO existing rules, TRIPS agreement, this is the problems we're facing, this is where we think we've made progress, etc. Simply in a non-binding, not pedagogical, but if you want, purely explanatory manner. It can't even be on the agenda. It's amazing. They veto the agenda. So to think that you could go beyond... And I'm sorry, you can't have your cake and eat it. You can't, at the same time, hope that we have a discussion in WTO, which is consensus-based organization, and at the same time dealing with countries who do not want the attempt to be agile, which is perfectly their right. But then those who want to go beyond because they're facing problems should be allowed to do so. You've mentioned a question on ISP liability and the safe harbor. Yes, as you know, our acquis provides for, if you want, conditional exemption of liability, this will not change. I can only repeat, it will not change. You can say that you disagree, but then you should perhaps see the text, which we hope we can show you. Clearly, because, as I've said, we're going to try to reach a consensus on this. It will not change anything. And to your last question on criminal sanction, whether they will hamper whether innovation, chill the innovation, yes. You have the copyright on that one. it's only logical. If you follow the logic that we're not going to change the acquis, we're not going to change the existing rules, and as far as I know, innovation is not exactly chilled in Europe, then you have the answer. It will have no effect. Other questions, sir, please?
Yes, this is Philip Cohen for the UNIFAB, on behalf of this association, which does exist since 140 years, representing all sides of industries. And my name is Philip Cohen. I just wanted to share with you my surprise vis-à-vis the whole size of the emotion that has been around this debate. Emotion, why? Because there is no dual approach or binary approach between the right holders and the citizens. For us, it's really the same fight. And what is defended by the right holders is also the same priorities as the one defended by the citizens, namely the security, the economy, the employment, safety and innovation as well. And you don't have to be a big company to be innovative and to be willing to be protected by IP rights. Concerning the initiative that has been summarized by Mr. Devine, I wanted to, on behalf of the UNIFAB, to salute the effort, and especially the fact that it's a worldwide approach, which is exactly what is missing in this debate since years. We have all been trying to fight to get a sense of transfrontier infringement issues, and for the first time, we have a real sense of effort at a quite large worldwide level, and that's not to be missed as an opportunity. In terms of due process, I wanted to thank you for all the reinsurances that you have been able to provide on, especially on the acquis, on the non-criminalization, on the fact that it's not about trying to pursue the individuals, but really to try to harmonize much more than what has been done in the past, the rules and the regulations that where we can acknowledge a lot of gaps, and the gaps are really the killers. And the last point is about discretion and confidentiality. Just wanted to remind you of this story that was part of the film of Mr. Orson Welles in 55, Mr. Arkadin, you know, where there was this very powerful king, and I'm not saying that the EU Commission is a king here, but the king says to the poet, what can I offer to you? And the poet replies, everything but your secret, meaning that secret on a temporary basis have some virtues, and I bow to those virtues. So that's what we wanted to add in this debate.
Well, thank you very much. Since there's not exactly a question, I will not reply, but it's very important that we hear all views, and this meeting is also not only to ask questions, but also to express what you wish and what you would wish to have out of ACTA or not to have it, of course, for the diverging point of view. I see the lady there. Yes.
Hello. Anna Hamal, University of Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. I have two questions. First, to take up on that medicine comment about health that was in your response to the previous question. If a medicine endangers health by some reason, that's already sanctioned, if I'm not mistaken. So my question is, why deal with it in the IPR's fora if there's already a guarantee, let's say, in health laws? And my second question is, I think you highlighted in your presentation that the problem is counterfeiting, piracy and commercial scale. So I think it's safe to say that. But I think that the problem is, how do you define that? Because this is by no means a fixed definition. So the scope is also a question of how you define these three terms. So I would appreciate if you could elaborate on that. Thank you.
Thank you. On your first question, medicine, if I understand well your point, you are saying that because medicines have to be controlled by health systems, have to be approved before the market authorization, so what you're saying, is what you're referring to, or are you referring to other laws?
No, I'm saying that if a certain medicine, or let's say if a certain action endangers public health, that's already sanctioned in other fora or in other frameworks. Why?
Like what?
Like, it can be a crime to endanger public health, for example, through a medicine which is not
yes.
proper, let's say.
That is true, but the problem is that for that to happen, you need a whole chain of evidence of criminal procedure. You need to find who's put it on the market, you need et cetera, et cetera. If you stop a counterfeit medicine at the border, before it's on the market, I mean, you establish different time infringement. You prevent, if you want, that medicine to arrive on the market in the case of counterfeit medicine. So I don't think, considering the magnitude of the phenomenon and the danger of the phenomenon, that we should go for less controls of counterfeit medicine. I'm not talking about generic, I'm talking about counterfeit fake medicine, dangerous drugs, because it's what your question is about. I think that the statistics that we see at customs showing the number of seizures, and you have unfortunately to assume that even if customs work very well, for each batch seized, there must be others who go through. And since you have an increasing trend, that it's a serious problem, and I don't think we should consider that the problem is already dealt with and that we don't need more laws. This being said, again, we will not change the acquis on this, but we have a very strong acquis. We have very good legislation in Europe in that. You had another question on commercial scale, which is not defined. That is true. But you have to leave it to the wisdom of the judge. It's like good faith, you know. Often you have the concept of good faith or other concepts, legal concepts, which are not defined because you cannot in a law plan for all cases. And we have that in Europe since many years. It's actually already from the TRIPS 94. Thanks. Other questions? Yes, Madam in green and gentlemen in white shirt.
Yes, thank you very much. Your last mentioning this example, I'm Eva Lichtenberger from the Legal Committee in the European Parliament. The last thing that you mentioned about medicines, which is, serves also as an example for the general attempt there, you said that purely criminal procedures would be much too complicated and much too, let's say, late to really have prevention on it. But
I mentioned there's a risk, not always the case, but there's a risk.
That's right. But here we come to a critical point. What exactly do you want to change? Because now we are arguing on the base of suspect. So everything suspect then has to be followed from the beginning on. So I want you, please, to give me some legal information how you would jump over this hurdle of, let's say, suspect and criminal procedures. This is not really in accordance with the acquis.
Well, first of all, I mean, ACTA is not legislation or treaty about medicines. So, for instance, with the previous question, we can't just englobe everything there. It's about intellectual property, and it's about enforcement only, and not substantive, which means that any measures, for instance, that a customs officer would take, customs only detain temporarily. And then there has to be either the shipment is abandoned, which is often the case because, by definition, criminals don't exactly prosecute customs to get their shipment back, or you have a right holder, which is victim, which will have to prosecute it. And it will be a judge, and not the customs, of course, who will decide whether it was counterfeit or not. Now, by contrast, criminal law is a totally different thing. And what I was saying is that if you have counterfeit medicine at the border, it might be better, it might be an extra safety net if you want to stop them already then. And in the case of counterfeit medicine, they will be simply abandoned because these are manufactured in foreign countries in the back of a garage or something. And instead of having to wait, if you want, that there is case of poisoning, having to find the evidence, etc., etc. That's what I was saying. But the two instruments are totally different. But ACTA will not change, if you want, I don't know, what is needed to prosecute criminal case. It refers exclusively to intellectual property. So counterfeit medicine is medicine infringing trademark, and it will be stopped at the border. Will it require changing EU law? No, because in EU, we already have all the instruments. We have procedures which allow right holders to register their product with the customs, etc. But it's for free. But all this doesn't exist in every country in the world. And this is what we're trying to achieve, that these instruments these law which we see as efficient to the right holders are also available to our right holders in other countries.
Thank you.
My name is Joe McNamee from the Association of NGOs European Digital Rights. I have one fairly easy question with a yes or no answer. The European Parliament adopted a text recently which says calls on the Commission to continue the negotiations on ACTA and limit them to the existing European IPR enforcement system against counterfeiting. Will you limit them as the European Parliament proposed? I have two then more general questions. You said that nobody in ACTA is proposing a three strikes rule. However, in two of the leaks, it was quite clear that the aim was to lead ISPs to introduce policies such as cutting off subscribers. Were these leaks fakes or were they real? I'm particularly worried about this idea of leading ISPs to introduce these measures because the current draft Council conclusions on cybercrime support exactly this kind of self-regulatory filtering of content. And my final question is that in the EU, despite the ICI, we have growing problems with ISP liability, blocking of websites, filtering of websites, taking down of often legal sites in Europe. If we export this to other countries that don't have the protection of the European Convention on Human Rights, don't have a data protection directive, what on earth is this going to do with regard to our role for protection of the rule of law and human rights internationally? Thank you.
On the two first questions, the first, and the first question on the European Parliament resolution, and I suppose you're referring to the paragraph 8 of the resolution, which, as you can imagine, we have looked carefully. We will, as I've said, well, first of all, in the institutional system, the Commission has negotiating directives or guidelines which are given by the Council. And these are very clear about what I've said about respect of the ACI. So the answer is yes, we will respect the ACI. I'm sorry?
Sorry, the question was, will you respect what the Parliament asked for?
Well,
will you respect the ACI?
If you allow me to answer what I want to answer, which is that we'll respect the ACI. If there was a resolution which would go beyond the ACI, would you like us to respect it as well? I suppose no. We have to be bound by, on one hand, our existing legislation, because the Commission is guardian of the treaties, and on the other hand, to our negotiating directives from the Council. So we will respect that. As your second question is regarding, I'm not sure I understood the details, but it was about leaks. And as a principle, as you can imagine, we don't comment on leaks. So I don't know which leak it was, but we don't comment on it. If you want the truth is here, is what the presentation I've given. And if you have any questions on that, you're most welcome, but we will not comment on leaks. I'm not sure I understood the question on human rights because, as far as I know, it's absolutely not touched in ACTA. And as you can imagine, because in Europe, of course, we are a member not only of the Human Rights Convention, but we have a lot more statute to protect human rights, but also privacy and data protection, which goes further than, strictly speaking, human rights. Torture, etc. We will respect that again, and absolutely, and it's mentioned specifically in our negotiating position that we're referring to that. Any other question? Yes.
Maurice Wessling from the Dutch Consumentenbond, Consumer Union. You have said that in the ACTA negotiations you will request for a disclosure of negotiating documents. What will the Commission do if this request is denied? And secondly, the European Parliament in its resolution has urged the Commission for an impact assessment on fundamental rights. When can we expect that assessment and how will it be timed inside the ACTA negotiations?
On the first question, which is a hypothetical question, if the New Zealand round doesn't lead to consensus on releasing the document, I can only say we shall see. I mean, obviously, we'll have to report. This would be very bad news from our point of view, but we shall see. There are several options envisageable. But I think it's a very important question, and clearly for us it is important that we can demonstrate, as I've said, that we do what we say, as just like I've said what we do. On your second question on impact assessment of fundamental rights, it is difficult to organize that before having the framework of the treaty, because obviously the questions on what to assess will be different. And since we are not yet there, I mean, it's difficult for me to give a timing on this. Yes, in the back, gentleman with the blue shirt.
I just want to... this is Erik Josefsson from the Green Group. I'm an advisor to the group. If you could explain a bit more about point 9, not point 8, the Commission's view on the Parliament's request to limit the negotiations to counterfeit only. I think you were not very clear in your answer to Mr. McNamee, where you repeated that you will not go beyond the acquis, which was not the question. The question was whether you would respect the Parliament's point nine, to limit the negotiations to counterfeit.
Sorry, I think it's a misunderstanding. Point 8 is on counterfeiting. Point 9 is on copyright enforcement and acquis communautaire. And I can reconfirm that we will be fully in line with the acquis, but I suspect this is not what you want to hear. No, what exactly is your question?
Sorry, it's point 9 in the resolution adopted, causing the Commission to continue the negotiations on ACTA and limit them to the existing European IPR enforcement systems against counterfeiting. That is point 9.
And that's point 8, actually. But
then we have different versions here.
I pretty much have the official version of the Parliament. But OK, it doesn't matter. I mean, the reference is not important. I think, actually, if you read the 9, which I don't know, perhaps it's the 10 in your version, it should answer your question, because you have the Parliament writing, urges the Commission to ensure that enforcement of ACTA provisions, especially those on copyright enforcement procedures in the digital environment, are fully in line with the acquis communautaire, demands that no personal searches will be conducted at EU borders, and requests full clarification of any clauses that would allow for warrantless speech searches and confiscation of information storage devices such as laptops, cell phones, and MP3 players by border and customs authorities. So do we agree with that? Of course, totally. This is fully in line with the acquis. This is what I've even said in my early presentation.
And the previous point, if you read that?
Sorry?
And the previous point, if you read that, you don't see that there is a request to limit ACTA to counterfeit?
And how do you combine that with the next point? Because on the next point, it specified what we should do on copyright, which is to respect the acquis, and I've said we're going to do exactly that.
So that is your comment to the Parliament's resolution that is inconsistent. Is that the point you want
no,
to
you
make?
Said that. I didn't say that. I only said that if you read both, it's very consistent. It's simply spread on two paragraphs. The gentleman with a pink shirt.
Yes, just in follow-up to the question you were just asked. Can I? My name is Paul Menner. I'm a journalist. And could you just explain to those of us who are not experts in IP law, why is one legal instrument being discussed that addresses counterfeiting on the one hand, which includes things like counterfeit medicines that could kill people, and on the other hand, file sharing and copyright issues? What do the two have in common, and why on earth are you discussing them in the same context?
Well, the answer is simply that because both relate to IP enforcement or IP infringement, and because they are regulated internationally by the same
treaty, which is a TRIPS agreement of WTO, to which all 153 members of WTO have abided. And also there you have one instrument dealing with both. And I agree with you, of course, that the two nature of infringement are totally different. I'm not saying at all that it should be considered as the same thing. These are very different issues with different interests, etc. But from a legal instrument, if you want, point of view, they are both addressed in the same instrument, just like they are in WTO. Thank you. Any other question? Yes, gentleman with the white shirt.
My name is Benjamin Henrion. I work for the FFI. We have an association with 3,000 companies and many independent software developers. We are concerned that the current ACTA negotiations cover patents. One thing we are concerned is the level of injunction that a judge has to apply to suspicion of infringement. There was a hearing in the European Parliament in the Legal Affairs Committee about the review of the IPRED 1 directive, and one French expert said that the directive had the effect to change the level of injunction from quasi certainty of infringement, mm-hmm, to give an injunction, to suspicion of infringement. And in patent problems, it creates a disimbalance that can offer very powerful weapons to enforcers. Let's say in the United States, they have, according to latest statistics for the year 2008, up to 30% of what is called patent trolls. And on the U.S. side, they have also a famous case which went to the Supreme Court, named the eBay versus Merck Exchange. Merck Exchange was a so-called patent troll that had a patent on the Buy Now feature, and they sued eBay for that, asking for shutdown of the eBay service. And the case went to the Supreme Court, where the court says that they were denying the automatic injunction. So now we have a conflict between the status of the law in the US and the one in Europe, because the IPRED 1 directive changed the threshold of injunction from quasi certainty to suspicion. Now what the French expert said in the hearing was that the old judges were reluctant to issue injunction in case of suspicion, because that might be too powerful. So do you intend to export IPRED 1 and this level of injunction to the United States and other countries?
Well, first of all, on patents, let's remember that we will not touch anything that is substantive as to patent right. This has to be clearly understood. Now, as you know, the substantive law in Europe on patent, on top of it, is not harmonized. But some enforcement measures through IPR enforcement directive, what you call IPRED 1, which is the only one in force, have common rules, and we will base ourselves on these rules. If the United States have different rules, there will be a discussion, obviously, in a negotiation and arbitrage or changes. But we will clearly, we are defending our acquis. This is our negotiating guidelines, is to defend the acquis. So will I export it? I think it's too far-reaching, because it doesn't work like that. But will the existing IPR enforcement directive be the basis of the Commission negotiation? Yes, but not more. So, for instance, there are no criminal sanctions on patents. We're not going to defend that. Thank you. Sir, please. Blue sweatshirt.
My name is Martin Köhler from the Green Group in the European Parliament. Just to switch the question that was posed to you twice, do you think that the Parliament asked you to limit ACTA negotiations to counterfeiting? I would like to pose the question in this way. Second question, and you might not want to respond on them, In the FTA negotiations, the free trade agreements that are being negotiated by the Commission now with Korea, Canada, and also the Central American countries, there is a formulation in terms of ISP liability, which goes beyond the e-commerce directive and leaves open. So it's a transformation of the e-commerce directive in a very peculiar form. Would you think that in these FTAs the acquis is being blurred?
Well, to the first question, I mean, if you're a member of the Parliament, I will not comment what the Parliament said. I can only read it, and if you take the whole resolution, it mentions counterfeiting in paragraph 8, and it mentions copyright enforcement, particularly in the digital environment, in paragraph 9. And I know that perhaps you would like us only speak of 8, but one has to read the whole document. In any case, the line is very clear. The line for us is the EU legislation, and I suppose the Parliament as well, but that's not for me to say. So we will respect the existing EU legislation, which, allow me to answer your second question. You say that we are, if I understood you well, in our free trade agreements are changing the e-commerce directive. I really don't agree with that. And when we negotiate free trade agreements, we do also with the colleagues who are the very authors or the very guardians, if you want, of these directives, and they wouldn't like us to change it. So perhaps there's a difference of interpretation there, but this is not our line. Thank you. Any other questions? Lady here, lady there, and gentleman there.
I'm Sylvie Forbin from Vivendi. I would like to, of course, to reassess our support to the exercise, which is the exercise of ACTA. And, of course, we follow very carefully all the progress, and we hope that we will have an end as soon as you can in the near future. I am a little concerned by some interventions here and there regarding legal framework and your answer on acquis communautaire. Of course, we are proud of this acquis communautaire, and we think it's a good thing to export it. Nevertheless, an acquis communautaire is not something gravé dans le marbre. It is something in movement. And when we speak of legal framework, we know in the main markets of the world where digital economy is developing that partly based on case laws, partly based on best practices, partly based on all the negotiation that we have on private and public ground, there are progress. So how do you assess some part of flexibility or how this treaty will be adjusted in the future from the signature of the treaty and in the future to adopt or to adjust to the technology progress and case laws, achievements, and legal framework changing in the countries, in the various countries. Thank you.
Thank you. You are right, of course. Legislation, by definition, moves. International treaties can as well. If we were to wait that legislation on one topic doesn't move to have an international treaty, we would have no international treaties. So I note with pleasure that you are optimistic about the future of the treaty, because you already mentioned about updating the treaty, which is not there yet. I mean, we'll have to discuss mechanism on how to do this. We haven't reached that stage yet. But clearly, of course, we don't want, as you say, that things stay in the marble for also
reasons that technology evolves and we can have new problems appearing and old problems disappearing as well. So it's very pertinent, very relevant question, but we'll have to address it in due time. But we certainly keep that in our mind. Thank you. Lady in black.
Yes, thank you. My name is Christina Szyzinska. I work for the International Trademark Association, which is a large membership association of over 5,600 trademark owners and professionals in 190 countries around the world. We actually don't have any questions at this stage, and we hope that your talks with your partners will maybe alleviate some of the concerns and that maybe some document may be coming our way at some stage so that we can comment. In the meantime, we would like to, as an international association, we'd like to offer our support, our continuing support, to the EU's participation in those negotiations, because we believe it could be a critical agreement in the fight against counterfeiting and its rising transnational nature. That is really the issue. It's the transnational nature of the phenomenon. And what we would like to see come out from this agreement are, of course, higher standards and stronger cooperation on combating transnational counterfeiting, stronger border enforcement measures, especially in relation to goods in transit, more effective criminal penalties, and we're very happy to see that there may be some initiative along the way in the EU. We understand that in those international negotiations, not having harmonized criminal sanctions in Europe can be a barrier or a difficulty in negotiating with other countries which do have criminal sanctions. So we hope that this will follow through. We, of course, hope that there is going to be stronger international cooperation between enforcement bodies of the signatory countries. That's very important. And more countries, if more sign up. And above all, of course, increased cooperation with industry. At the end of the day, we hope that this will become a gold standard agreement in the fight against global counterfeiting.
Well, thank you very much for the support. As I've said in the beginning, in the reason why we do this to preserve our competitiveness, our jobs, our export interests, clearly. And so it's good that this is shared by those who are producing the intellectual property rights, which is not the case of us, of course. So thank you very much. I note that cooperation with industry, and for us with industry, also consumer organization is important, as we do in other fora. So fully agree with that. Thank you. There was a question in the back. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. My name is Michael Bartholomew. I'm the director of ETNO, which represents all European major telecom operators. First of all, I'd thank you very much for holding this hearing today. As you can see with the large turnout, so much of our information has been based on leaked documents, rumors, as you mentioned early on. And I would encourage you to please keep us informed in this open and transparent way for the future weeks, because for a long time our counterparts in the United States, industry in particular, has been very fully informed, and it would be good to have a similar exercise here. Again, excuse me for, in a way, basing some of my concerns on these leaked documents, but obviously, you know, when they're here in front of you in black and white, it causes some concern. So I wanted just to make one particular point, which has been made some by my other colleagues, that we really are very concerned, at least based on the documents we've seen, about some disproportionate and very wide-ranging measures, including having users being disconnected from the Internet. I think this has been made clear today that by yourself as well, which I'm particularly glad to hear, that this is not going to be the case. And we certainly would urge you to please do not go and negotiate a treaty that goes beyond this very delicate balance reached in the acquis communautaire so far. So this graduated response approach we believe should not be introduced in ACTA in any way, shape, or form. And again, I wanted to express our appreciation for the fact that you're being open and transparent, and you've dealt with a lot of seemingly our own concerns, and we'll make sure that we check with you the next leaked documents we get to find out if they're true or not. But thank you very much.
Well, thank you for this. As I've said, we don't comment on leaks, so this might not be the best way. I think the best way would be that we are successful in New Zealand in having the documents, negotiating documents released, because then you will see that what I've just said, indeed, that, and I can repeat it, because I know you like to hear this kind of music, that there will be no three-strike rule or graduated response. And no one has even proposed it. This is the irony of it. I mean, it's not as if one party had proposed it. No party has ever proposed it. But let alone if a party were to propose it, we would refuse it. Okay, clearly, I fully agree with you on that. It's a non-issue. I do understand that because documents are not public, rumors get spread or get inflated, and this is human, this is natural. When one doesn't know, one imagines the worst. But I can only repeat what I've said. I mean, it cannot be more clear. And even if quod non, but even if we were very cynical and lying and everything, rationally, how could we hope to impose this to member states, to European Parliament? I mean, it's just nonsensical. So it's never been proposed, would never be accepted, and will never appear in a proposal that will come back from the negotiation. Thank you. And the lady in black, and then gentleman in the back.
Hello, good morning. So my name is Jin Shen. I'm representing the European Shipyards Associations. So my question is rather sector-specific. Maybe you, yourself, you know that for our sector, we're missing one legal instrument to protect our IPR because we cannot enjoy border control. As indicated in Paris Convention, for aircraft and vessels, when it's in transit of a country's border, they cannot detain the vessel or the aircraft. So, but the problem is a ship is a very complex creature. The producer and the owner and the registration and the trade are all in different countries. So they are all the time in transition. So once they are constructed, we cannot stop it anymore. So the problem here is, we know we cannot change legislation, we cannot change Paris Convention, but we all know this part of the provision from the Convention is based on very old UK case laws in the 1700s. Well, at that time, it's completely old-fashioned and outdated. And now in your document, in your website, you said now we'll try to update our enforcement based on more modern and updated legal system. So I wonder whether it's possible to address our concern without changing laws. For instance, we don't have to detain a ship in transit, but we could impose a deposit or a kind of a tax. I guess this can be integrated as part of the improvement of the enforcement system. So I would appreciate your response on this aspect. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I do understand the concern and also the hard times that the European shipyards have been through. So I'm fully sympathetic to that. The problem is that, as I've said, ACTA is not a substantive IP law treaty. So it will not change Paris Convention or any other international convention on this. It's purely enforcement measures treaty. So if to solve your problem, which I do not know in details, of course, but would be very happy to look into it with the colleagues of internal market or taxation and customs. If you need a change of substantive law, that it's not possible. And I suspect this is what it is. So certainly ready to look into that, but I don't think ACTA will be the right vehicle because it will exclusively deal with enforcement.
But then it's really a pity because in ACTA, you have all four major shipbuilding countries around the table. Of course, only China is out. And
yes.
Yes.
No, I understand it's a pity from your point of view. But there's also other stakeholders who think that already dealing with enforcement is sensitive. I think dealing with a substantive law would be worse. But I think, I mean, we should discuss this perhaps in a separate meeting and see what can be done. And because I do not know exactly what the nature of the problem and what even let alone what the legal solution could be. Thank you. Yes, I think there was a gentleman who hasn't spoken yet in the back.
Thank you. My name is Karsten Gerloff. I'm the president of the Free Software Foundation Europe. First, I would like to start with a small comment. You said that you are not aware of any international negotiations which are public, explicitly naming WIPO as an example, the World Intellectual Property Organization, that secrecy as we see it in the ACTA process is a normal thing. Now, the Free Software Foundation Europe has been a registered observer at the World Intellectual Property Organization since 2004, and we've successfully participated in dozens of meetings. So from personal experience, I can assure you that secrecy, as in the ACTA process, is not indeed the norm at the international level. Now, to the actual questions, can you perhaps elaborate a bit on the process by which the European Union arrives at the common position which it represents in the negotiations? Which directorates general are actively involved? How is the EU's internal negotiation process organized? What committees or working groups are there? And another question, some documents that we've seen indicate that there will be an organizational structure set up around ACTA. Now, I know that you do not comment on leaks. However, otherwise there's very little of substance to comment on. So my question is, will there be such a structure to administer support and perhaps develop the treaty further? And how will a broad range of stakeholders be represented in this organization? Will there be, for example, as in WIPO, a relatively open and participative process? Thank you very much.
Okay, well, you'd have to admit with me that to organize stakeholders' meetings since 2 years, even before negotiations begin, is not exactly definition of secrecy. When I refer to international organizations which are not held publicly, I was referring to the WTO, and TRIPS Council is not, even TRIPS Council is not public. This is the body that deals
Excuse
with...
Excuse me, the slide explicitly said WIPO. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, I said that we could not have to organize the negotiations in other forum because countries didn't want the topic to be mentioned. And then I gave an example of the WTO as where negotiations are not held publicly. But I'm very happy for you that you are an observer in the WIPO. I mean, this is fine. And in the committee or... Well, in the institutional arrangement that we're going to do with ACTA, which has not been discussed yet, we also plan to have a meeting with stakeholders or to have stakeholders associated, but it's not finalized. I think the best is to wait that the process is a bit more advanced, and then we can know more about it. Thanks. Yes.
Yes, I have a very quick question. How are you going to make sure that you're not going to slice across IP rights? Because we feel that there is a real sense of unity of IP rights, especially without forgetting, for instance, the geographic indications, which may tend to be forgotten. So how are you going to make sure that there is no bad slicing of the rights? Please, thank you.
Well, as you rightly say, I mean, geographic indication is very important in Europe, but also in other countries. Definitely for us, this should be covered by the scope of the agreement. There are divergences with other countries on this. So, again, this will be a discussion. There will be discussions and negotiations on that. I think if you I'm sorry to repeat myself, but if you follow our logic, which is to defend the acquis, and you will know exactly which rights are covered by the acquis. Not all rights are covered by the acquis. For instance, are no criminal sanctions on patents, and by definition, since we're going to respect the acquis, we're not going to introduce that. But our acquis covers other rights for other types of measures, both the measures, civil sanctions measures, and we intend to follow this structure. So, indeed, no slicing or saucissonnage, I suppose. This is what you were referring to in French. Gentlemen, we have not spoken yet first, if you don't mind.
Thank you very much. My name is Marius Schneider. I'm the chairman of the ECTA Anti-Counterfeiting Committee. ECTA is the European Community's Trademark Association, and we are representing trademark and design owners all around Europe, as well as their representatives. I would like to tell you that ECTA has followed the negotiation process of the ACTA, and ECTA very much supports ACTA. We have always done, and we will continue to do so, because we acknowledge that creativity and innovation are key assets of the European industry. We are looking forward to strong standards for enforcement, and not only for dangerous counterfeiters that are distributed by criminal organizations, but for all counterfeits. And I would like to thank you for organizing this transparency meeting and for inviting us to this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This support from ECTA to ACTA, I mean, you rehearsed that, right? Is very much welcome. Thank you very much. Yes, you and then you.
Thank you. And I just wanted to thank you for your time today, for all of you today. My name is George Kears. I'm an advisor for Deutsche Post DHL. I'd just like your short presentation, very much appreciated. Will it be available for us to download from the website? Thank you.
The answer is yes. Thank you very much. Yes.
I got a quick comment on what the sir from Ethno said, and explaining how you, Mr. Devin, can be right when saying that there is no three strikes in ACTA, and Mr. from Ethno's fear still be founded. Because what we analyze from the leaks, so probably they're fake and lies and so on, but we do what we can with what we have right now, is that we see a whole arsenal that is aimed not at forcing three strikes, but at inducing restrictions upon internet access. The civil injunctions, the statutory damages, and possibly the criminal sanctions will all have the effect to put so much pressure on the internet operators that they will be forced to agree on those so-called voluntary agreements and those contractual measures that all together have only one single goal, that is to circumvent the due judicial process. This is what we saw in France with the ADOPI. This is to get rid of the need of demonstrating the prejudice of online file sharing. And this is what ACTA could lead to, according to every analysis of the leak so far. So I'd like maybe a comment from Mr. Devigne on this induction of any restriction, not only the three strikes and the internet cutoff, but it could be a decrease of bandwidth, it could be blocking of websites, it could be protocol blocking and so on, inducing it through contract laws. Do you think this is something we should look for, is to apply restriction through contracts instead of due judicial process?
Okay, thanks for this question. Well, first of all, I'm happy that it begins to be understood now that there will be no three-strike rule, and I suppose that you will change the information you spread accordingly, because you have said everywhere that there is going to be a three-strike rule. I say no.
You said that they would be induced, not imposed, all the time.
Okay, well, that will be induced. It will not be induced neither. That is very clear. And, well, you can have it both ways. I mean, if you ask the questions, you have to believe the answer. If you don't believe the answer, why ask the question? So the answer is very clear. It will not be induced. And if you look at our acquis communautaire, we will strictly respect that, including the exemption of liability for ISPs, etc. This is what you're referring to. As to the statutory damages, as you know, they are extremely limited in Europe in the directive and European directive, and we will strictly stick to that as well. So there will be no more statutory damages than what is allowed according to EU law. That's only what I can answer. Other questions? Gentlemen? Yes.
Magnus Franklin from MLEX. Just a question on procedure. You mentioned this digital online.
I didn't understand the organization.
MLEX, sorry, I'm a journalist with a news agency in Brussels. On procedure, you mentioned the digital online provisions in this a lot. Have you negotiated this in the previous rounds, or is this something that has yet to be discussed in New Zealand or the future meetings?
We've touched upon the first part of the internet environment in the Mexico round, but not the second part, which concerns technological protection measures, etc. This has not been touched yet. It will be touched in New Zealand. Other questions? Yes, and then gentleman in blue.
About the question about the acquis, there is a small problem, at least as I can see it, is that when the April 1 directive was adopted, the term intellectual property was undefined. So the Commission published a document, for me it's a non-legislative document, which gives an impressive list of all IP rights covered by the directive. Okay. Do you consider this document as legally binding for the member states for the implementation? And have you looked at the real implementation in all the member states if they have implemented the list of all those rights in the 27 countries? I know in some countries like Spain or Greece, the term intellectual property is being seen as covering copyright and trademarks. And they use another term for industrial property, which covers patents. So what is the acquis? What is the scope of the current IPRED 1? Because for me, this document you publish with the clarification is just some kind of lobbying exercise or guidelines for member states on which rights are covered by the directive, but it's not a legislative document in itself. So I want to know what is the current status of implementation of this directive. Thank you.
Well, I don't think you will be surprised that I consider that documents published by the Commission as binding. This is the case. The Commission has published a document with a minimum list of rights, of intellectual property rights, which are covered by the directive. I have a copy here in front of me. And so, yes, I do consider that as binding. As to the question of monitoring the enforcement of the directive by several member states, I'm not sure this is the place to discuss that. I mean, it's not that I will refuse to answer your question. If my colleague Bernard Lory of Internal Market wants to comment that, but this is totally different from my jurisdiction on ACTA. It's an internal market issue, if you want. Internal European law issue as opposed to an international negotiation issue.
Good morning. My name is Benoît Lory, and I'm working in Internal Market Directorate. And regarding the state of play of the enforcement directive, as you know, all member states have transposed this directive, and the Commission is engaged into the evaluation of this directive. And we expect, the Commission expect to publish the evaluation report probably around summer or after summer.
Okay, gentleman in blue.
Thank you. My name is Dirk Poot. I'm a blogger from the Netherlands. It is my understanding that the treaty is to be effected as a plurilateral treatment, whereas the European Parliament has expressed that they would encourage you to expand the basis of the treaty from plurilateral to multilateral, allowing more freedom for the individual signing countries to leave out certain implementations of the ACTA agreement. Will you try to widen the base from plurilateral to multilateral? And the other question is, how many consumer advocacy groups or groups working on digital civic rights and privacy are currently partaking in the negotiations about on ACTA?
Well, thank you for these two questions. The first question, will we try to have multilateral visa? Of course, I mean, the idea is that as many countries as possible would be good, because so we cannot force, of course, countries to join. So, by definition, it's on a volunteer basis. As to your second question, consumer groups participating, well, there is no private group participating in negotiation. It's handled by governments, but there's also no private industry groups. And industry groups has no more information, I'm talking, of course, from a European Commission point of view, than any consumer group. And the very reason is that we organize stakeholders meeting like this where we invite both, all stakeholders. So there is a strict equal treatment there. Thank you. Other question? We have 15 minutes left. But we can finish earlier, of course. Ah, yes. Madam in green.
Yeah, thank you again, Eva Lichtenberger from the Legal Committee in the European Parliament. We have a very intense debate right now about penal sanctions and about the intervenience of European law in penal law on member states level. But enforcement mechanisms, as we will have also some obligations then in coming from ACTA if it would be finished, then have to be done by the member states. So how will you run this process? And what is your mandate on that? Because this is very unclear. What will be the role, for example, for the legislation on European level and the enforcement mechanisms that you will member states ask to take?
Thank you for these two questions. First, on the negotiating guidelines, very clear. It's the presidency who negotiates on behalf of the member states, the rotating presidency, not the Commission. So it's not for me to answer further on that. The only thing I can comment, though, to your second question on the enforcement mechanism is that if you follow the point of view, the principle that nothing will change to the legislation because we follow the EU acquis, it's an irrelevant issue because there will be no need for new legislation in Europe. Thank you. Sir, yes?
Yes, thank you. I would like you to explain the institutional arrangements, the executive board that will be created, the flexible incorporation of new elements, how the, let's say I would call the Politburo of the ACTA agreement is going to work, and how it will go into the future, and how this will affect relationships in global governance between this executive board of ACTA with the WTO, the United Nations, WIPO, and those and organizations. And as well, I would like to know the relationship between if the countries that decide not to apply the agreements of ACTA will be placed upon the European Union's name and shame priority list for IPR non-cooperation.
Thank you. I'm not sure the last one. Is it a question or is it a statement?
It's a question.
Ah, well, then the answer is no. First of all, we have no name and shame list. And secondly, of course, we would not put a country who doesn't sign up to an agreement as simply as you, as to use your words, name and shame. I mean, this is not how we operate. The list of priority countries for infringing IPR, which we do publish, is based on custom statistics of seizures of counterfeits. I mean, I don't think this is very much disputable. And it is also based on either legislative deficiencies or serious enforcement deficiencies, which is also hardly disputable. And last but not least, we also consider the willing of the country to address it according to its level of development. I mean, it is not one size fits it all. We clearly know that not all countries can afford the same level of enforcement, although not having laws enforced is hardly something which helps a country. Usually it's the other way around. As to your question, I mean, I leave you the copyright also on the word Politburo. I suppose you refer to the committee which is referred in the ACTA. I mean, clearly you have members willing to have a light structure, some others willing something a bit more structured, if you want. We haven't reached the discussions there, and this is not something we've decided. Clearly, from our point of view, an agreement that needs to be enforced always benefits from a dispute settlement. So to go back to the previous question, if it had been multilateralized in WTO, that would be certainly something useful. But we are very far from being there yet. So I think we'll come back to that when we have reached progress. Thank you. We can take one or two more questions. Yes, madam.
My name is Margaret Verhulst from internet service provider Access for All from Holland. It's good to hear that that the three strikes and the ISP liability are not the idea of the EU principles, but it are negotiations. So my question is, you win some, you lose some. So my question is it hard? Because you can say, like, three strikes is not our idea of it, but maybe other parties.
No, I can be as clear as can be. Three strike is no one's idea. No one has ever proposed that. It's as simple as that. Right, if we have no more questions, I would like to thank you all for coming here and giving us your thoughts, which we certainly take on board for the next round of negotiations and possibly the ones after as well. We remain totally open to any request of more information or anything that we could help transparency. We think it's important, as we've said. We want to have the negotiating document being released so that rumors can be dispelled, myths as well, and that then we don't have to comment on leaks. Thank you very much.